This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All righty, welcome to the edition here of Reinvention Radio. Mary Goulet, hey, Mary Goulet. Hey, Richie Ote.
Hello.
What's up, everybody? Steve Ulscher here, and Adam Hudson has joined us in studio, so thank you for that. And a little confusion about getting you here in studio or not, or yes, or not, or and here you are. So for those listening to us live, there is a hotel room in San Diego right now that is going completely and utterly unused. And which hotel is that? And what room number is it?
I don't even know.
Yeah, you don't even know. All right, so we can't even send anybody there to take full advantage of it. So Richie, your stabbing cabin is out of luck, man. We can't. Yeah,
we'll find out. Staybridge Suites.
Fancy to boot. It's a.
They won't
suite.
Let you get your money back because you didn't stay.
I have no idea.
Oh, man.
I might hit him up after.
Yes.
Right.
Take
a
yes.
Nap. See if you can do, yeah, right? At least do something with it. It's a suite, for God's sakes.
I know, right?
Should be able to get something going. All right, so let me ask you this, man. All right, so you came here from, well, L.A. today, but you split your time between L.A. and Australia, yeah?
Yeah.
So what's the deal with that exactly? Because obviously you're from Australia, so why the L.A.-Australia thing? Why? Like, if I were to leave the States, I don't think I'd ever go back. Would you go back?
I don't know.
Ever, I don't know if I'd
Where
ever go
Where you
go back.
If you leave?
Anywhere but here. Like when Trump wins, which he probably won't, and God, I hope he doesn't, I can't imagine staying here. Like literally. I don't know. We'll talk about this next week because by next week we'll know, right? Mm. So you split your time. Why L.A. versus like New York or any other place? Because if you come from Australia, you could literally go anywhere, right?
Yeah, you could. I mean, I was here full time for 4 years in L.A. and I started a little animation company in Hollywood, which I sold last year. So L.A. for Australians is kind of...
That was Pixar, by the way. Congratulations.
Yeah.
On that. That was, you're very humble about it, but congratulations on building
so
and selling
much.
Pixar. Yeah. Nice job. Yeah, and Finding Nemo or whatever that second one was really sucked. I just must share that with you. But okay, so L.A., yeah?
Yes.
And you started an animation company there because, of course, if you're going to start an animation company, I mean, L.A. is certainly the right place to do that.
And it feels like home there. The weather's the same and, you know, people seem to like Australians there. So it's a cool spot to be. Plenty of Aussies as well.
Yeah. And realistically, I mean, when you look at, you know, an Australian, you know, an Aussie, it's like we don't really know who you guys are. You know, you don't look any different until you start talking. And then we're like, oh, yeah, okay, it's one of those people.
Yeah.
And so there you have it. All right. So you just kind of flip that little, you know, hey, I just started an animation. What does that mean exactly? You started an animation company and then you sold it?
Yeah, I sold it last year.
Wow.
And I kind of got into it in a weird sort of way. I actually had a finance company beforehand. We used to raise investment fund money for early stage companies, crowdfunding before it was called crowdfunding. And
was that like accredited investors only to like VC level?
Yeah, lower than VC level. What was there's a little provision in the Australian, you know, law that allowed friends and family and sophisticated or same as verified here to invest. And we noticed that when these explainer videos started to become popular, that companies who were trying to raise money who had these little cartoon explainer videos were raising about 60% more money than everyone else because investors could actually understand what they were doing. So when I sold that company, I moved to the States looking for something new to do and basically said, how about I just do that little cartoon video business? And that's how I started.
All right. Yeah. So and take us through like what that actually looks like. I mean, as much as public information, yeah, or is this all private? Because I'm just curious, like, what was the revenue when you sold it? What did you sell it for? How do some of those valuations work?
Yeah, some of that I can't talk about, but it was a seven-figure exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I started it on my own with about $5,000.
Wow.
So I bootstrapped the heck out of it, started doing everything myself, taking the AdWords inquiries myself. So I was the salesman. I outsourced pretty much all the production, and but we kept all the customer service, the service layer onshore, and some of the work offshore.
Mm-hmm.
We used local script writers, local voice actors, and I think really the answer was that we provided awesome US based service, and me being an entrepreneur knew what the market wanted, so we knew how to sell it, and I just worked really hard.
What was revenue at that point when you exited?
It was around. I'm just trying to think about it, $1.5 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Was it software and a service? Was it SaaS?
No, it was just all service. So if you wanted to create a video that explained how things work, whether it's a tech startup or an app, we did a lot of corporate stuff. So we did stuff for MasterCard and the UN and just different projects. So we had a lot of corporate clients. Yeah, and they would come to us. We would write the script, storyboard it out, and then create the explainer video behind it.
Yeah, and we cover a lot of things here on the show, but one of the things that I love trying to figure out and get to the answers to, and I know, you know, Mary and Rich and Wade, everybody here really appreciates when people are open and honest about this, is like, what do you think is the difference? Because, I mean, there's like a lot of companies out there that start, but they never get to six figures, let alone seven figures, let alone to an exit. What are the things that you think you did right? And by the way, you've done this you've done this more than once.
I have, yeah. I think, you know, it comes back to the real basics in selling a business is, you know, the reason I sold it so quickly and I had two offers for the business almost within a few weeks of it being listed for more than what I asked.
Back up for a second. Like listed. So if somebody wants to sell a business, when you say listed, what do you mean?
When I got a broker to actually put it on the market. A business broker in Los Angeles sold it for me. Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, the key is, you know, having a business, being an immigrant, basically, my books were super,
super
clean.
You guys don't count as immigrant. I'm sorry. It's like, you know, people from London, people from Australia. Like, that's not an immigrant. Okay, fine. I get, yes.
Well, Steve, you know, doesn't think you're an immigrant unless you came in on a boat.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
If you took a plane, you're a privileged guy. That's
climbed the wall, you know.
Great.
Your government's tough, you know, because to get the visa, you have to say, this is what I project I'm going to be doing and in terms of revenues. And then if you don't do it, you're sort of under the pump. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so coming in, it was just like, you know, I showed every single dollar that was being made. My books were super clean and I ran a very, very tight business because if you want to sell a business for reasonable money, there's a chance people are going to have to borrow to buy it. So, you know, banks and stuff like to see clean numbers. So, so keeping your books really tight and keeping your head on straight about what your actual profit is. Like I knew my actual profit to the cent every single month. And a lot of people don't. They have no clue what their margin actually is after all expenses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Is that because they just skimp on sort of the accounting side of the equation? They just don't think that there's enough of something there to actually account for? But why are people so loose with the numbers?
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's not that they've got vision and they think big and they've got, you know, that's not their strength. Numbers is not something they like to talk about.
Yeah.
And for me, when I was younger, I used to have businesses that were a mess. And, you know, come tax time, it was just a nightmare. And as I got older, I was like, I just need to remove that stress out of my life. So the first thing I do is get my bookkeeping processes and everything in order so that as it scales, it all works. So I think that's the thing. And also having a defensible business, you know, that people in a, you know, an objective light can sit down and see why it's worth something, you know, you know, it's got to be something that's saleable. And my business really was saleable. It was something that people can take over and run and do pretty well with.
Because you weren't the business.
Exactly.
The product.
He wasn't the talent.
Was the business.
Not at all. I can't draw. I can't do voiceover. I don't write scripts.
Yeah, my animation studio did not do well. People were not digging on the stick figures and so on. But I think the point is well taken that you are not the business,
totally.
Which is why anyone could really come in and then leverage what you had put into place and then scale that and moving forward because everything else, they needed to do so was already, you know, in place. So pretty cool. So just for those who don't know you, obviously you've got an entrepreneurial background. You've got a number of different companies and education I know is a really big passion of yours. And I know you've got something in that space now. But kind of give us the 30 seconds of Adam Hudson.
So where I am now, about 2 years before I sold the animation company, I was looking for a little business that I could start on the side so that when I sold it, I'd have an income. And I'd seen these Amazon boxes sitting outside of people's doors everywhere I went in America. And,
I can't even get into my house because of all the Amazon boxes that the wife has like stacked by the front door. So yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then I found out anybody could start a company selling their own products on Amazon. I love the idea of products because I wasn't selling my time, which was great. So I started a little business selling some products on Amazon and
let's be specific. So because a lot of people talk about like arbitrage, right? Like you can take a product like, you know, this cup I can buy for 5 cents. I turn around, I sell it for 10 cents. I don't touch it. It drop ships the whole nine. All you have to do is position it as like, this is the world's best cup. Here's why you should pay 10 cents for it. Is that, did you do it that way through arbitrage?
No, I don't do arbitrage. The reason is margins are very tight in arbitrage and it's
Amazon and Walmart. If you're a commodity play, Amazon and Walmart are kick your ass. Yep. Bezos even said out loud, your margins are my opportunity.
Yeah.
So you got to do branded products of some kind. I mean, I don't know.
So,
I think that's
so what did you do? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I did what's called private label. So I found a high-end, high-quality product where most people go into the cheapest thing they can afford to start a business on, where they're buying $2 or $3 a unit. Mine were like $30 a unit to buy.
Electronics?
Electronics, homewares, home and kitchen stuff, but high-end quality stuff where my stuff's twice the price of most of my competitors, but my design is exceptional, my packaging and branding is exceptional. So I have high margin, low competition.
All right, you got to back up for a second. There's people right now, their wheels
are exploding.
Right, their wheels are spinning. How do you find these products? How do you source a product? Because you're only as good then as the manufacturer that creates this product for you. How do you do that?
Right. So I started on Alibaba,
just
reaching out to suppliers in China. Mm-hmm. And the key to that is don't be a dick, because so many people in the West
Kelly, that's a tweetable right there. Adam Hudson, don't be a dick. That's the key to success. Okay.
Yeah, like most people
on sales.
most people go to the Chinese suppliers and they want the absolute cheapest and they get the quotes and then they start to try to bid them down. And what I'm famous for saying amongst the Amazon people is I say, okay, I've got your bid. What could you do for me if I gave you 20% more? Mm-hmm. And you watch them like, we don't understand. I said, I want a premium product. I want the best in the market. And for them, that's a huge bump in their margin. And you'll be amazed what they can do for an extra couple of bucks at the manufacturer level.
So did you actually go to China to actually see this stuff? Or did you do everything on Samsung FaceTime and then it exploded and that sort of thing, or no?
I didn't go to China until last year. I was selling for 3 years on Amazon before I went to China and met my manufacturers.
Awesome.
So was that because you were here? Because it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Australia.
Yeah, no, just because I was lazy.
All right. Wow. Wow, you guys are jumping out of your chairs. We'll keep Adam on for all 6 hours here today. All right, so we'll be back with Adam Hudson here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
Alrighty, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulcher hanging out with Mary Goulet.
Hello.
Ricciote.
Hello.
And Adam Hudson. What's up, man? All right, so before the break, we were talking a lot about Amazon. And just, you know, it's funny. I just started toying around with Alibaba. And, you know, that's been around for a long time. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, it's a, well, like the... What is Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, which is just a little bit funny when you come right down to it that it's named Alibaba and you're buying stuff from China. God bless the Chinese, but you kind of feel like you're dealing with the 40 Thieves. Sometimes, at least, that's been my experience. Don't send a hate mail. Not every Chinese person is a thief, okay? But I will say, don't be a dick, but I will say that some of the quality of the things that I have bought through Alibaba leaves a little something to be desired. So it speaks then to the power of what you were talking about, which is paying these guys a premium, but I assume that you probably went through a number of manufacturers, or did you get lucky with the first one?
No, you kiss a few frogs. You get samples sent over, and some they clearly don't care, and then others really do. Mm-hmm. And there are great services now that you can send independent inspectors to the factory, and they're really inexpensive, and it's amazing what you can get back from a $200 report. Photographs of your inventory being packed and inspected on 30 points or whatever it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if somebody wants to get started in the, first of all, is there still room for people to get into this world? Can people, Like, if Mary Goulet wanted to get started in this whole world of Amazon buying, selling, that sort of thing, is there still room for a Mary Goulet to make money?
Yeah, I get this question all the time. And earlier,
so you would say it's probably not a great question. It's a question you get all the time, just to clarify. Yeah, okay, got it. I get it.
Like, everybody seems to think the boat sails and all these things. But earlier this year, I launched a handful of little products that that sell for $40, and I buy them for about, you know, they cost about $6 by the time they get there.
What are they?
I don't tell people what I sell because, you know,
because
a lot
Mary Goulet and Rich O'Tay will be on that in a
that's heartbeat. The toughest part is finding which product and making sure you get the great quality that you want and pricing it and staying enough under the radar that your competition doesn't try to crush you because it will.
Exactly. And you know, you got to do what you got to have a moat around your business, some kind of moat. And I think a moat is quite achievable if you approach it the right way. But that those six little products today are probably netting around $350 a year net. Mm-hmm. And I started in March with those ones. So
now you get no inventory, right? Everything is drop shipped, or do you actually
I own the inventory.
You have it shipped in
directly to Amazon.
Amazon.
So goes from China straight to Amazon's warehouses. I can be anywhere in the world.
By Amazon too?
I do fulfillment by Amazon, which for anyone listening is what you need to do.
No. Don't say to anyone. Say to everyone.
To everybody listening.
To everybody listening. All right. So just take us through that process. Okay. So you find the $6 thing on Alibaba.
Right.
And now, because that is where you get it, right?
It is.
Okay. So you go to Alibaba. We're not saying what it is. You get that $6 thing.
Right.
You place an order. Is there like a minimum that you have to buy?
They always tell you there's a minimum, but you know, that's always negotiable. Mm-hmm. We tell people to set up a basic little website for your distribution company so that when you're talking to them, you look like someone. Mm-hmm. They always tell you there's a minimum. It's always negotiable. I started with one pallet. I think it was 200 units. Today,
so you spent $1,200.
Yeah.
That's right. Sorry. Numbers on it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. On a small order. Yeah. And then basically it ships directly. Amazon give you the labels for the cartons and the pallets, and you give those to your supplier. They put the labels on, and it ships directly from China all the way to Amazon's warehouses.
So wait. So back up. So you go to Amazon. You say this is the product. Amazon gives you the labels to you, so you then have to ship all of those labels. So you have to print those out?
No. You just send the PDFs straight to your Chinese supplier.
Just send the PDF.
You just tell Amazon what you're sending in, and they'll tell you where to send it.
Okay.
So they'll quite often put it across three warehouses, so they're close to the mass population centers in the U.S., and then that's it. So you literally don't see the product. I don't touch my own product.
The Amazon content, the contact, who do you contact at Amazon? Like, how does that work?
As soon as you sign up for Seller Central.
Yes.
Seller Central, $40 a month. And they have an amazing service. At the bottom of the site, you click this button, put in your phone number if you need support. They call you back instantaneously, which is just unreal.
So you go to Seller Central, you set that up, you find your products, you get this PDF, you email that PDF to your Chinese supplier slaps it on, sends it to these various Amazon warehouses, and then what happens?
And then the products show up for sale on Amazon. So then it's up to your photography and the way you describe the product and your keywording, and you can advertise for Amazon pay-per-click. So if somebody's searching for, you know, headphones, you can pay to show up for that search term.
So is that your product, headphones?
No, it's not.
All right, so let me ask you this. And the page that you're talking about, do you set that up or Amazon sets up that page on Amazon?
You set it up with very tight parameters. And this is one of the things that's great. Everybody's got the same parameters. And there's really not that much to it. There's a headline, bullet points, and a description, and then some keyword fields that you can optimize.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of ways that someone else can get a major advantage over you, which is why design is so important, and the quality of the product. I have a strong belief that America and the rest of the world is getting tired of cheap rubbish.
Sure.
And there's a real market. There's 10 million millionaires in America. So I'm looking after those. I'm looking out for those guys. I want the people who are less price sensitive and are prepared to pay me my margin.
Mm-hmm. So how did you learn this process? Did you go through Amazing or did you join...
I did join Amazing.
Did you learn from Dan Hollings?
No, I joined the Amazing.
Ezra Firestone?
I know Ezra. I know who it is.
All right, let's talk shit about Ezra for a second, can we? Yeah, can we? Dan, I like. Let's
Ezra's
talk shit
cool.
about Ezra.
I like Ezra.
Ezra's cool.
Ezra's cool. He's got, I like his man bun.
Right. So where did you
not like any man's bun.
You like Dave's
you like
man
buns,
bun.
Though.
Yeah. All right. Dave buns. All right. So how did you learn this?
I went to amazing.com initially, and not to talk trash, I disagree with the way that they teach people, because they initially said buy stuff that retails for under $40 that is in the top 100 when I was in the first intake, and they sold a ton of those courses, and immediately immediately I thought they're going to send thousands of people to the top 100 at the same cheap stuff. So I want to be in a blue ocean rather than a red one full of blood. So I want to go into something that's more premium. I'm going to take my time. And I was kind of the tortoise, realizing that if you got into a blue ocean area with higher margin, you'd do better.
Did you create any content around it to drive traffic to it?
This is the amazing thing. I was on webretailer.com an article last week, and I didn't see the headline until it came out.
Taking notes. Maybe it's like, I'm going home and I'm doing this right now.
Yeah.
You got a full page of notes.
The headline of this article was, Meet the Lazy Amazon Seller.
Is that you?
That's me.
Oh, man.
And I was wrapped with that headline because that's the point of being in business for me is like, you know, do as little as possible and make as much as you can.
Yeah.
And that comes down to having products, like three products I have right now in that particular category of the six I told you. They're on page one for the main search term, and they're literally twice the price of the next most expensive competitor.
Jeez.
So everybody else is half the price or less on my page. And to answer your question, sorry, what was the question?
Well, how do you get on page one?
You're answering it now, but then at the same time, I'm wondering, because a lot of people's techniques too are basically just the key metrics that Amazon cares about are more sales and more reviews. Mm-hmm. So if you can get more sales and more reviews, they don't even really care about the margin
about
as much. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm wondering how did you drive people to that page and get to be one? Were you playing the review game or were you?
Everyone was playing the review game until recently. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago when Amazon made that worldwide change, everybody played the review game, but I didn't overly play it. I think I got 50 reviews of my products. Some people in different niches have to get 500 to be in player
and
in that space.
And what is that so I can review it? What's the product?
Nice try.
So what change did they make to the review game?
They made it illegal to have incentivized reviews. So in the past, there were companies, and I actually owned probably the largest review company I had the first one in the world. I Love to Review. So we had tens of thousands of reviewers, which I built for my own needs initially.
And they got paid if they did a review?
No, not paid. Got they a get product. A product for free or heavy discount in exchange for an honest review. But the Amazon took a view that, you know, if they got it for free or discount, they're more likely to be positive. They're probably right. So they changed the rules. But at the end of the day, the question comes back to what drives more reviews and more love from Amazon is a good product. Mm-hmm. If you have a good product, people are going to review it more positively and it converts better. So long term, there's always going to be hacks, but nobody wins long term with black hat or hacks. Mm-hmm. You have to have a product like Amazon's like Tinder. You got to have something that stands out. It's got to look good. That's our first port of call.
So I just wanted to ask a question. You said that your price, let's say yours was $40 and then the next competitor was $20.
Yeah.
Why would people click on you and would they do that after they bought the $20 one and realize?
A curiosity factor?
Yeah, I don't get how you.
They are totally different looking things. So they're the same product, as in they do the same thing, but my product is uniquely designed, beautifully packaged, and the photography is amazing. It's nothing short of amazing.
I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I worked in e-commerce for years in the shopping cart industry, and it was like I always wondered why everybody raced to the bottom for the cheapest product when, you know, you go to a high-end restaurant, let's say steak restaurant or something like that. You look at the ones that get it, they'll always put the highest price wine first, not the lowest price wine first, because somebody's going to want it just out of that 10 million millionaires you're talking about, someone's going to want it just because it is more expensive.
Amazon is like any sales organization. They get a lead. Somebody types in what they're looking for. Amazon wants to send that lead to the person who's going to make them the most money. And if the product converts and it's twice the price, they know with my product they only have to sell half as often to make the same money as they will with the cheap crap stuff. And I've got the best reviews of everyone on page one because my product is better because I spent the money on the things that matter.
So, all right, so we get
like
back
a
up.
Review company.
Just kidding. So, all right, so back up for 12 seconds here, and that's about how much time we have left in the segment. But the question is, you buy it for, let's just say hypothetically, six. You sell it for 40. That margin, how much does Amazon get of your profit?
By the time it's all said and done, Amazon will take between 20 and 28% of the gross. Mm. By the time they take their 15% commission and their handling fees.
In addition to charging you on the pay-per-click and everything else?
In addition to the pay-per-click. I spend almost nothing on pay-per-click.
Wow. So Amazon is loving you guys then because...
Totally.
Yeah, because they, you pay for them to go to that page because you're driving traffic to that page. through Amazon. So Amazon's getting it on all sides of the equation.
It's a no-brainer for Amazon. Jeez.
Yeah, but if you're getting all their traffic.
Well, and then there's that. But now I understand why Bezos is man, that's a smart dude. All right, very cool. More with Adam Hudson here, talking about reinventing Amazon and all that fun stuff here on Reinvention Radio. More after this.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Alrighty, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Hanging out with Adam Hudson, Miracle Labor Sorte, White Way, hanging out with Kelly Polker somewhere. And let me ask you this. So, Mary, you during the break, you ran, you got your credit card, and you handed it to Adam. I've never seen you move that quick, like, in my life. Why does this have you excited? You're pretty stoked about this.
Well, I've been talking with a gal who did essential oil. On Amazon, and so she's been involved in this community for a long time, and Dave was interested in doing it because someone else had mentioned it to him. But then there are people out there that are selling these for $5,000, you know, you can buy in, and and then I'll help you, but it's going to cost you. Give me $50,000, and I'll get your product on there.
Yikes.
Yeah, seriously, there's scammers out there.
That's done for you, and hopefully done for you well, but probably done for you poorly. So you start, Adam, so you start people out at reliable.education.
Yeah, that's my website, just www.reliable.education. Mm-hmm. And we give away a free course for people to get an entree into how I teach. Mm-hmm. And then if they like what they learn there, they can become a paid student as well.
So it's got to kind of irk you a little bit when people teach this stuff but don't really do it, right? And you do this, so you're certainly one of the people who, well, you're – what I believe is that most people who have the knowledge are just too selfish to share. Right, because they think that, you know, it's kind of that scarcity mentality. You, on the other hand, say, this is a huge pie, and I can teach, you know, tens of thousands of people how to do this, and you're still going to have your piece of the pie, but you're also going to help others. So, talk about some of the success stories, people that you've worked with and you've helped.
Well, you know, there's so many. People don't realize there's 2 million Amazon sellers. You know, there's a lot of people around the world selling on Amazon.
What are they making on average? Like an average Amazon seller makes what?
You know what? I don't know, because Steve Bezos had a letter out. You can probably get it online where he actually revealed some of this data. But I actually don't know that number. But we have some pretty incredible people within our community. We have one guy we refer to often, Graham, who's from Australia, started 18 months ago with about $2,000. Selling in the health and fitness category, had 3 jobs at the time, currently doing about 800,000 US at a margin of about 40%.
I was going to say, if you can make 400%, that's,
40%.
40% is still,
still
good.
Very good. Yeah, yeah.
And I meet, you know, tons of Amazon sellers. One of my business partner in one of my other companies, Zonguru, John, started 18 months ago as well, was in advertising, doing about $50,000 a month now with 2 products. Mm-hmm. And I just hired him to come run Zonguru for me. So, success stories with Amazon are everywhere, because you don't have to build the site, you don't have to find the customers, and you don't have to do the distribution, and that's what attracts people. That's like the holy grail. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, so let's do a case study here. Let's just build something from scratch. Hypothetically, if somebody owned the domain like easy.wine, so just hypothetically, not liquor.com, and this episode, by the way, is sponsored by the good folks at liquor.com, but this, no, like, let's just say hypothetically somebody owns easy.wine. What would you do if you were in this Amazon type space? What would you put on a domain like that? How would you go about it if you had a domain like easy.wine?
What do you mean? Like set up e-commerce products on
like,
there?
Yeah, because you could tie it to, obviously you've got the Amazon thing, but you could take the Amazon things and pull it off and put it onto a site too, like what you said,
you
right?
Could.
You want to have a site that looks
you could.
Good, right? So
what's easy.wine selling? Is it selling products for wine? Is it selling wine itself?
That's a good question. So hypothetically, if easy.wine was selling like products, let's just say not necessarily wine specifically, but you know, like things that complement the whole wine world, like corkscrews or recipe books or you know, T-shirts, or maybe even how to make your own wine at home, and or those sort of
bags.
Things.
You put the wine bottle in as a gift.
And that, exactly. Yes. So just hypothetically. Well,
if it was me, I would create a premium wine brand, and I would target it at wealthier consumers. And I would pay very attention, close attention to the packaging, because wine's a perfect gift. So I would make it a premium product, because when people give a gift, they're not giving what's in the box, they're giving the box. They want to, you know, it's like Tiffany, right? So people want the experience. You're giving an experience. So you need to pay particular attention to those kinds of, those kinds of nuances. So that's what I would do. I'd get my own private label. I'd get it made in China. I would spend extra time finding a quality supplier. And I'd pay extra attention to the boxes and packaging. In my case, I spend twice as much on the box as what's in the box.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, like, I still have all my Apple boxes. They spent so much money on designing those boxes.
Course.
Do you have any other product in your house where you keep all the boxes?
Well, with my products, I get complaints if there's a mark on the box. I had to get a second box to go over the box
because they wanted to keep it.
Because they wanted to keep it because it's so beautiful, you know.
So what's got you most fired up right now? Like, what are you really excited about?
Look, for me, education was something I was super hesitant to go into because I totally shared your view, which is those who can't do teach, and I'm very aware of that. Mm-hmm. But I got to a point after my career where I was like that I had all the stuff I wanted. I have the nice house and all those things, and I really wanted to go to teach because I enjoy it. So I love talking about this stuff, and I love helping people. So we have people all over the world we're teaching, and that's what I get my joy and stuff from. And we're able to do a lot of good through the business as well. We give to charity and do all sorts of stuff with it as well.
And if you don't mind me asking, how old are you now?
42.
And so from a financial perspective, you've achieved all of your financial goals and you're set and you're just kind of playing and that sort of thing. So going back sort of to the win-lose conversation from the sound off, are you more fired up to do things now, or have you reached sort of a level of complacency, or not even complacency, but just fulfillment where you don't have that same fire to create something, you know, bigger than what you're already doing?
What fires me up has changed. You know, it's easy for me to sit here like a Zen monk and say, oh, stuff's not important when you've got all the stuff.
Yeah, so, well, exactly.
You know, I managed to be debt-free and I own a beautiful home on the beach and different things like that. So what gets me excited now, I'm not a guy that wants anything more physically. I wake up every day feeling like the luckiest dude on earth. Legitimately, you know, that I'm alive and I'm healthy and all that good stuff. So what excites me now is increasing the giving part of my life. Mm-hmm. I really get a kick out of that. We do micro loans for every student that comes on. We do a loan through Kiva. So we have our goals are around those kinds of things really excite me the most in the business, and then producing more people, like getting my CEOs to financial freedom and so on as well along the way. So that's what really pumps me.
Sounds like the from success to significance, making that move.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or as I call it, the golden shift from prominence to relevance. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And so Amazon, any last thoughts as far as just the platform itself is concerned, or if there are other opportunities that are equally attractive as Amazon right now?
I think for a lot of listeners out there who are looking, everyone wants to know, how can you build a business that gives you your time back? That's really what people want businesses for. And I think Amazon is the most exciting thing I've seen for the reasons we've touched on. And it's definitely not too late. You know, I was listening to Mark Laurie, who is the founder of Jet, who got bought by Walmart. And
he said, $3 billion
after 2 years.
Fast.
Yeah. And he said, you know, online
retail.
You know
who's so pissed? You know who's the most pissed about that? Webvan.
Right.
Like, the people from Webvan have got to be so ticked off right now, but I digress.
I mean, yeah, Amazon
should have never changed their name to Webvan in the first place.
Yeah.
The two names they had choices for, it was just like the AOL Time Warner.
Right.
Amazon's disrupting retail and they're only just beginning. You know, Mark said we're at $300 billion in online retail in the US right now. We're going to $1.5 trillion by 2030. So there's a massive shift going to happen in the next 15 years like we haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And it's only just beginning. And I think drones are going to be a huge part of that shift. I'm going to sell BB guns when they come out, so dibs on that. But, you know, that's going to disrupt even further. Like, why would you go to the store when you can have a helicopter drop your stuff off?
And I love opening the door and there's a package.
Right, it's like magic. So I think we're
like
at the
next day.
We're at the right
sometimes
time at
the
this.
Same day.
Yeah.
Same day, right? Yeah, that's where it's heading. It's going to be the same hour soon for many Americans. So. And they've just announced yesterday that they're opening in Australia. And the quote in the Australian Financial Review, our main financial paper, was Amazon's plan is to destroy Australian retail. And that's the actual quote in the paper.
Jesus.
So what's going to happen to UPS and FedEx, especially around the holidays? Because Amazon vans are all over my neighborhood every day.
I have no
idea. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, once Amazon gets into the world of carrying other people's packages, that's when those types of things.
They're doing it now with Dragon Boat, with their own freight forwarding ships from China and America. That's the project they're working on. They'll be an infrastructure before you know it. Logistics.
Oh, man. We could probably go on and on and on and on here because there's so much fun stuff to talk about. All right, Adam Hudson, really do appreciate you coming in. Reliable.education. Yeah.
That's the best
place for folks to go. Reliable.education. All right, Mary Goulet, by next week, I fully expect to see an Amazon store or something.
I know.
From
I'm
going
to talk to him.
All right, sounds like a plan. All right, guys, thanks for being with us today on Reinvention Radio. We will talk to you really soon.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olscher, visit reinventionradio.com.